you, thank you from my heart, from the bottom of my heart. Thank you from my heart, from the bottom of my heart.
I resented every beauty about Colorado. Colorado is very, very beautiful. We have mountains, you know, in the morning they're bathed with this purple light. It's just exquisite. And I would just glare at them and be like, they were the symbol of having been taken away from where I felt like I belonged. And after a while, I started to realize, oh, I'm miserable. And I'm actually doing this. I'm actually contributing to this in some way. And I don't know exactly if it was like the dawning of that or something else happened, but I started to just see beauty everywhere. And I just started to really focus on beauty and everywhere. And I realized that that energy, like that sort of relationship, went from, I am a miserable human being who is pretty much a drain on everyone who's around me, to actually feeling like I was made of light. You know, it was like, and I was inhaling the beauty around me.
Welcome to the Gratitude Podcast on www.georgeandbenta.com, where you'll hear a new story each week that will inspire more gratitude in your own life. Our mission is to inspire 100,000 people to discover how to feel gratitude and live a happy life through the amazing life stories of our successful guests and their actionable tips. And now, the host of our podcast, Georgian Benta.
Hi, Gratitude Seeker. Welcome to a new episode of the Gratitude Podcast. Today, as always, we have another really special person here on the Gratitude Podcast. She's an Ayurvedic practitioner, mother of two, sustainability advocate, TEDx speaker, recovering cult member, and the CEO of Rasa, an adaptogenic coffee alternative revolutionizing people's relationship to their energy. She's always been obsessed with energy, and she is currently working on finding ways to help people with energy. And I think, of course, this is an important part of how we work as humans. But she has a really interesting story that I would love to find out more about and share with you on the podcast. Her name is Lupa van der Mersch, and I'm really happy to have her here with us on the Gratitude Podcast. Welcome, Lupa.
Thank you so much, Georgian. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Wow. I can really feel how present you are, and I really appreciate that.
It's great how you can feel those things across the miles, isn't it?
Yeah, it's actually quite amazing. I love realizing how the simple thing that we're doing right now is actually, thanks to many complicated things that are happening in between us. But for us, it's simple, and it feels like we're having a conversation, being in the same room. So I'm always grateful for this. And it's amazing how close we can feel, no matter how far away we are. But I wanted to ask you more about your story. You have done some amazing things. And the first thing that I'm really curious about is, how was it when you moved to Costa Rica to take care of wildlife in the rainforest, when you had no electricity and you were basically most of the time just with nature? I'm really curious about that experience, because gratitude works great in contrast. Like, When we have experiences like these, it's when we can see the amazing things that we are experiencing right now. So let us know a little bit about that part of your experience.
I love that you pulled that one out. That's one of my favorite experiences of my life. So it's a joy to get a chance to speak about it. And it's so apropos to gratitude as well. Because I, you know, as soon as you mentioned that and we're in the context of, you know, you have created this like sacred container for exploring gratitude, which is really beautiful. And so I'm in that container with you. And then it gave me an opportunity to reflect on this experience that I've had in a new light. And when I was down there, you know, had none of the normal amenities that, you know, didn't even have a refrigerator. Our running water came from the creek. And so if it rained, the water would turn brown. So if the clouds came in, we'd be like, oh, get water from the creek before we get have brown water for drinking. Because you never knew if it was going to rain for, you know, an hour or a full day. It really gave me an experience of gratitude for like the very simple things of existence. And now granted, I was also in an incredibly beautiful place and deep and beautiful nature, virgin rainforest, but I did not need things for my gratitude. I had only what I could fit in my backpack, and in fact, my clothes would all get moldy very quickly. And so I had to wash my clothes even if I didn't wear them once a week, otherwise they just get completely moldy and destroyed. And so I had to preserve the few things that I had. And, you know, even without electricity, even without, you know, I think I had $60, you know, very little money. I was incredibly happy. And I think it gave me an experience that the base, like this, it gave me this felt experience that I think will never go away, that the base of our human experience is actually a state of happiness and gratitude if we have sufficiency in our environment. And we don't need very much for sufficiency. And so often the things that we add on top, you know, the things that we want and the, you know, goals we have in our lives and the physical stuff actually kind of clogs our channels of experiencing gratitude and experiencing happiness with life as it is. So it was an amazing experience. Nature is such an incredible teacher, and it was an experience of wonder and awe at nature constantly, and myself as part of nature. You know, I was very close to, you know, I saw snakes that could kill me, you know, at least a couple of times a week. And you know, you're constantly surrounded by beautiful and deadly things, and it just made the experience of being alive so fantastic, and the realization that we don't need much to feel sufficiency and to feel abundance and to feel gratitude.
Exactly. And what you just shared reminded me of a story. I'm not able to say it perfectly, but it goes something like this. And there was a fisherman and the business person, and the business person approached the fisherman and said that he can fish more and sell the fish and get a bigger boat and fish even more and get several boats and hire other people and so on and so forth and grow this business, and then once he will have all of his fleet with boats that are going out fishing and people working for him, then he will be able to just be at peace and just fish quietly, having the financial part solved. And his perspective was, why would I need to do all of these things when I can do this right now? you know, I can enjoy this experience of fishing right now. You know, so
yes,
I was thinking about the having things, you know, versus experiencing.
Yeah, that is one of my favorite stories, actually. I say that one a surprising amount. You told it perfectly. You told it perfectly. Oh,
thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I have a mind that's just focused on the practical parts, and I don't remember the exact details, but I'm happy that that you said that it was good the way I told the story. So yeah, I think this experience of being in nature is both a beautiful connection and also a reminder of how good we have it each and every day. Like for me, that's one of the things that I'm reminded of when, for instance, when it's raining, or when it's very hot outside, or when there are all kinds of bugs that don't let you enjoy the present moment in nature. I think about the fact that actually we've managed to create some environments that, even though we've gotten used with them, they are amazing. Like, we can control everything in very much in detail, so that it's perfectly tailored to what we like, and we sometimes fail to see this and to appreciate this, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the fact that we have, you know, so many of us in modern life have climate control, refrigeration, you know, we can keep the bugs out, you know, all these kinds of things. It makes it comfortable in a way that it's sometimes easy to fall into complacency and to forget to be grateful.
That's so true. That's so true. Yeah. But getting back a bit to just this perspective that we have in general on life and on spirituality, I know that you've had some interesting experiences being a cult member, and it actually helped you find nuance over dogma. And I think this is one that's very powerful and very important for many of us, because we all tend to have some kind of dogmas that we have in our life that aren't actually serving us. And it's one of the reasons why I'm doing this podcast as well, to find out nuances of gratitude, not just dogmatic ideas that some people might have about this topic. And I'm really curious on your perspective on this. How did your perspective on the world change from dogma to nuance?
Yeah, thank you. That's a great question. One of the things that I realized as I came out of this traumatic cultic environment was that, you know, I started to look at what got me in there. You know, of course, I started to look at, you know, what are the beliefs, what are the habits and patterns that brought me in and made me continue to say it was okay to be in a pretty abusive context. And that got me started examining so many things about, you know, the way that I am, and, you know, from attachment traumas and some of the, you know, unhealed childhood wounds to some of the beliefs that I had taken on with spirituality and my beliefs around growth. I was very aggressive about growing and thinking that like it really, really had to hurt. Otherwise, I wasn't really growing, for example. And I started examining, you know, entire kind of structures of identity of myself in a way, you know, down to like, okay, so I consider myself to, you know, be an environmentalist, or I consider myself to be politically left. What does that mean? You know, just to take an example, what does that mean? Okay, so that means these certain things about me. And in, I think this is especially interesting in the context of a very media saturated world, and our very media saturated lives. We are reflected many, many things that we, you know, impact us and influence us in subtle and gross ways. And we take on parts of this identity. And so I'm going to, just because politics is so hot right now and such an easy precedent to be looking at for the current context. So if someone is left on the political scale, then they have these certain characteristics. That means that you are, you know, in the American context right now, you're a pro-vaccine, which means you are, you know, you're an environmentalist, you know, you want to stop climate change, you want these, all of these different kind of beliefs that go with like, I am a left person, you know, versus if you're on the right, then it has a whole other set of beliefs and structures and identities around that. And I started to really examine each one of those in from my political perspective, from my spiritual perspective, from my like, even like, what do I value? What do I believe in? What's important to me? And that process made me start. So all of those kind of identity structures become their own dogmas. They are, and we tend to take them face value. And I think especially in the context of modern media, just like, oh, and a great example in the United States right now, and I'm not sure how it is where you are, but you know, one of the things that's happening now is if somebody chooses not to get the vaccine, then they, for whatever reason, that has, you know, all these political implications about what they are as a person, you know, oh, okay, then you must be a Trump supporter. You must be an anti-vaxxer, somebody who doesn't like vaccines in general. You must be this, 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 and this. And all of that is dogma. All of that is not actually looking into the real texture of the situation. And it makes sense in a very overbusy life, which so many of our modern lives are. We need to do that to some extent. It's easier to do that because it simplifies things. It's just like stereotypes. Stereotypes are also dogmas and ideas about people. And we do that to ourselves. We have dogmas and stereotypes and ideas about ourselves. And so I kind of, in that process of recovering from the cult, I examined every aspect of myself and every belief and looked at some of the things. I was like, wait a second, this one's not mine. I borrowed that from somebody else, put it on myself because I thought it would look good, whatever it is. And it doesn't belong. It doesn't fit with this sense of who I am and what feels right to me. And so I got to dig into sort of what is this core sense of self. And I think, you know, in that experience, you know, one of the lenses I can use to look at this for gratitude is it's so easy to think like, well, we should be grateful for certain things. And I myself in my life, especially in recent years, I've had, it's been a bit of a struggle to grow Rasa and have my kids and be recovering from the cult and the complex, PTSD that I've had from that, you know, all those things at once. And then I've had this, I would kind of use gratitude to, as a weapon on myself, be like, well, you should be grateful, you know, like, look at all you have. And like, you know, and that is not an effective approach to feeling gratitude. It's just a way of beating yourself down more. Trying to should yourself into gratitude isn't going to work in any context. And I think that that's a dogma that many people hold around gratitude and being grateful. Exactly. Is that, you know, well, we should, and, you know, and then it can also, you know, that can lead towards kind of a false sense of gratitude, which doesn't actually penetrate your heart and come from within. And I think my experience most is that gratitude is best when it's actually coming from within and not something that I'm trying to put on myself or say that I should have. Forcing myself to feel gratitude so far has not worked. Although, which is different though than actively cultivating and working on gratitude as a practice, like it's exercise, like it's a muscle. In the same way that you wouldn't go and say like, well, I'm going to force myself to lift this 400-pound weight. You're going to hurt yourself if you do that, you know, without training. But if you're slowly like, okay, I am committed to cultivating this exercise, this practice, this strength of gratitude, I'm going to start with 5 pounds and then 10, and then I'm going to just build it up. And then at some point you will be, it'll be much more easy for you to lift 400 pounds, even if you don't do it every day. Someday you might be like, you know, I just don't have it today. Life beat me down and I am not grateful. But then you have those muscles to be like, okay, all right, today I don't want to wallow in this place. Today I'm going to pick it up and I'm going to do the thing, to use exercise as a metaphor. So that was a lot. And sometimes I speak very kind of circuitously. So hopefully hit some of the points that we wanted to hit there. But the cult taught me a lot.
Yeah, you sure did. And you actually got to one of my favorite topics on gratitude. And like you said, it's a dogma that people put on others and on themselves as well. This one with you should be grateful or I should be grateful. I think it's a very bad approach. And it's something that we tend to do with other people as well, and we tend to do it with ourselves. And if you want someone to feel ashamed, you can do that, and you can easily make that person feel ashamed. But if you go deeper and have some empathy, you can understand how it works, how you work with this, with gratitude, with appreciation, and how they work as well. And there are much better ways of approaching this, of course, than just using this idea of you should be grateful. Like I said, you're going to help someone feel ashamed, but you're not going to help them feel grateful. So yeah, I think it's an important dogma that is specific to gratitude. And it's one of the things that I'm trying here to not to fight, to take to another level, to take it deeper, basically. Because when we go deeper, we have empathy, we understand how it actually works and why it's hard for some people to feel grateful, and how we can help them if we really want that. And I think it's something important for all of us to learn at one point. But I also wanted to talk a little bit about energy and your obsession with energy. When did this obsession start, and where is it right now?
Giving a gift that supports someone dear to your heart can be a real blessing. Woohoo You made it very simple for you to offer a memorable gift that your loved one will surely cherish for the rest of their life. Help him or her feel appreciated and valued right now. They might need it more than you think. Go to georgianbenta.com/woohoo or visit the link in the description to find out more.
Great question. It started, in my teens, really. At that point, I was really, something awoke in me. I don't know how else to say. This actually ties nicely into a really early experience of going from darkness to gratitude. I was in my teens And I had moved in the middle of high school across the country to a new state, moved to Colorado. I felt like I was rich from the place that I belonged, from the people that I felt like I belonged with, from that sense of safety that is so important, you know, especially for teens. And I resented every beauty about Colorado. Colorado is very, very beautiful. We have mountains, you know, in the morning they're bathed with this purple light. It's just exquisite. And I would just glare at them and be like, you know, they were the symbol of having been taken away from where I felt like I belonged. And after a while, I started to realize, oh, I'm miserable. And I'm actually doing this. I'm actually contributing to this in some way. And I don't know exactly if it was like the dawning of that or something else happened, but I started to just see beauty everywhere. And I just started to really focus on beauty and everywhere. And I realized that that energy, like that sort of relationship, went from, I am a miserable human being who is pretty much a drain on everyone who's around me, to actually feeling like I was like made of light, you know. It was like, and I was inhaling the beauty around me. And that experience of energy, I was 16 at that time, and began to coincide with me starting to explore spiritual concepts and spiritual path in general. And I started to get hungry for more of that. It was like I had tasted this experience that felt like, you know, I see energy can be seen in so many different ways. And to define it for me, it's like it's a quality of beingness. It's a quality of experience. Like we all have this, you know, I am a me, and I am experiencing reality right now. And, you know, we have this little texture that kind of goes with that. And that texture influences our emotions. It influences our thoughts. It influences, you know, so many different things. And I started to get really interested in how could I also have that be bidirectional and me influence that texture and influence that energy, whether it was through meditation, whether it was through what I was eating and how I was engaging with my body and all of that. And not to say that it was a perfect path to, you know, constant sourcing of more energy. I you know, fell off miserably many times, but it was that first experience that had me being like, okay, what I want more of that. And I experienced that energy. You know, I have a spiritual lens, and maybe not everybody does. But to me, that was like the experience of God, and God itself felt like a quality of energy. And so I was hunting and seeking and asking and pleading and praying, to find more of that. And that quest took me in many, many different directions, including in a cult, but also including in, you know, a very beautiful spiritual tradition that I was in before that, where I learned a whole slew of meditation practices and ways of working with energy and ways of aligning ourselves with energy of virtues, to bring more of those virtues into our own lives, and ways of working with the mind so that the mind becomes less of a hindrance to our experience of energy, and so many different things. I'm in a very different phase of life from, you know, being a teen and being in my early 20s and having total freedom and being able to do whatever I wanted and, you know, meditate for hours a day and travel all over the world and all those good things. Now I have two children. You know, I'm a wife. I have a business. I have a 20 or so people who depend on me for their livelihood in a very real way. They also depend on each other very much. And, you know, we're all doing this together, but it's definitely an experience of a lot of responsibility and a lot of energy. And one of the things that I'm really working with now is because I have so much that I'm kind of wielding in my life right now, I have to be incredibly responsible to the quality and flow of my energy. And that quality and flow of my energy is one part, you know, my own contributions to it and my own, you know, the ways that I work with it. And also one part, you know, God-given and biologically limited. And so, you know, I have burned myself out so badly in the past and realized just how much that affects the business, how much that affects my kids, my husband, everybody around me. And so I have this responsibility to really steward my energy and to stay in a regenerative cycle with it instead of kind of burning it all out and then replenishing it a little bit and burning it all out and replenishing it a little bit, because that's a depletive cycle. And so I'm trying to stay in this zone where it's like, okay, if I start to feel I'm getting a little burned out, or I'm getting a little kind of brittle and more dry and more sharp in my energy quality, then, and I was actually just experiencing this last night, and I was supposed to have dinner with my in-laws, and I was like, you know what, I really need a bit of rest time, because if I don't get that, I'm gonna start going off. And, you know, luckily I had the circumstances where I was able to go ahead and take a little bit of rest. And it was just amazing to feel how it kind of pooled back in. And I was like, okay, there's some more of that energy, and I'm going to have to be careful with it and be this steward of this finite experience that we have of being alive. And the energy that comes with it, the energy that infuses our consciousness and animates us as humans. And our product is very focused around that and the quality of energy that you're bringing in. And, you know, we're a coffee alternative. And so many people think of, you know, I think coffee and energy are kind of synonymous in a certain way in modern culture and the way that we use it. And, my experience of coffee also very influenced by my experience studying Ayurveda for many years, and then also doing exploration in Chinese medicine and Taoist practices and all of this. Coffee is a pretty blunt object in terms of the way that it energizes you, and like it's functional, you know, it works in certain ways, but it also, we view it as an extractive type of energy. Chinese medicine actually has a saying that coffee borrows energy from tomorrow to fuel today. And that's the exact kind of extractive cycle that so many of us are in with respect to our own lives. And in respect to our relationship to the earth as well, we're taking out too much and not putting enough back in. And so when we started Rasa, we were like, how could we give people an experience of energy and sustaining so that they can continue to do all the things and, you know, be supported in that, but also in a way that gives back. So like almost like regenerative agriculture is giving carbon back to the soil and keeping a closed loop system in a sense within the energy of that ecosystem. We're trying to do the same with our own body and our own energy. And modern life is, you know, it can be very extractive. It can be very, you know, burn yourself out today so that you can get the win tomorrow. You know, fish more and more fish so that you can eventually relax and relax and just fish and enjoy a simple fishing life. And that's a pretty common, you know, trope in modern society, but if you change the way that you energize, because our energy influences every aspect of our lives, you know, it really does. Energy and emotions are very closely linked to each other. Our ability to access gratitude, our ability to access the best parts of ourselves comes when we're in, you know, as much of a balanced state as is workable for our current life circumstances. And when we also accept, okay, I can't change this thing. You know, this thing is bigger than me and it's just going to be what it is. So how can I also work to accept that? But we have more access to that if the quality of our energy is nourished, calm, vital, and you know, the quality of energy that you get from, for example, drinking the herbs that we include in our coffee alternatives is a very different quality of energy than coffee. But you're also, you know, on the scientific level, you know, you're not getting that cortisol spike. So coffee, part of why you feel so awesome when you have coffee is because it gives you a cortisol spike. Cortisol is a stress hormone. So it's giving you that, like, you know, I can run away from the tiger, or I can fight the tiger. It's going to be fine. And we don't want to be in that state all the time. You know, we want to try and actually work against that state, particularly because modern life has so many of that kind of messaging around us, and our modern bodies haven't caught up to the fact that when our phone rings, it isn't a minor emergency. You know, it's like, oh, I have something happen. I have to pay attention. And we're kind of, automatic. Oh, why am I forgetting the term? It's AFE, automatic facilitation, something, where we're kind of always micro stressed, just by the circumstances of our lives. And you know, of course that varies from person to person and context to context, but I think that is, you know, pretty broadly the case. And, so if we're energizing and nourishing ourselves and nourishing our nervous system and actually working with calming that stress cycle, by what we're taking in, even just as a, you know, a daily cup, a daily habit, it's going to actually ripple out in so many different ways in your life. And, so that's, you know, one of the things that we're doing, you know, as a business, and then I'm working with that, you know, in as many ways as I can as well, seeing just how much my inner energy impacts the people that I have become responsible to.
Most definitely. Most definitely. I've seen in my own experience that managing energy is extremely important, and the quality of life is influenced by this as well, and the quality of the interactions. And one of the things that I've come to accept is that, for instance, at the end of the day, for me at least, it's, since I have less energy, for me it's just harder to feel grateful. It's my brain is like focused on just rest and not thinking about all kinds of things that have happened throughout the day, and just is more likely to be influenced by negative things and negative thoughts. And I've for a while I tried to fight it, but I've seen that this is how I work. Like when I'm low energy, it's really harder for me to get the resources to just have a positive outlook and be grateful. And I just know that I need to rest and trust that tomorrow with new energy, I will be able to get back on track with gratitude and with a positive outlook on life and the world. And I think this is another important part about energy, right? That it's about how we manage it and knowing ourselves and how we work. And for instance, I don't drink coffee. And actually, I think it's for that same reason. I don't feel the need for cortisol. I've seen the effects that traditional coffee have on me. Like I get a surge of energy and I get really agitated, but then I feel so sleepy that I feel I can't do much, and for me it just doesn't work. It doesn't make any sense to have this habit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think habit is maybe the key thing too, because, you know, it's not that coffee itself is bad. It's more about the way that we use it and the dependencies that we build. And coffee especially is a very physically addictive substance. And we see it like, you know, on the spectrum of alcohol, you know, if I told you, like so many people are like, don't talk to me until I've had my second cup of coffee, or I just need 2 cups of coffee in the morning and then I'll be good to go. And if I said that to you about like, I just need 2 glasses of wine in the morning, you know, and then I'll be good to go, you'd be like, you have a problem. but we don't do that with coffee. And I think that they're, you know, have equally significant impacts on ourselves. And so it's not that either of them in and of themselves are bad. It's about what's right for our body, what's right for our energy, and having the awareness and cultivating that awareness to know, you know, there are many people who can do a cup of coffee a day and it really just doesn't quite, you know, have any negative impact. I would challenge many of those people though to try taking a month off and just see what happens, because so often we are in a dependency and we don't actually acknowledge that we don't see the effects that it's having on us because we're so dependent on it. But that said, there are many who would be like, yep, no, I just, you know, it's fine. And then, you know, now I'm drinking coffee again and it's fine. So there are those people, but there are also so many people that I think are using it as a way to, you know, go beyond our body's capabilities and like not rest when we need to rest. And, you know, our body gives us signals like, I'm tired. And very often in our culture, the response is, oh, drink coffee. I'm tired. Drink coffee. No, your body is saying, please rest. And I also want to acknowledge and understand, you know, not everybody has the ability and the freedom and the privilege to just rest when they want to. And so like, I understand that there are many instances, that might influence that decision. But if you have the capability to, you know, downshift even a little bit, to do a little bit less, to take it a little easier, to, you know, sometimes like my life is very busy. And, you know, sometimes I'll just have 2 or 3 minutes between a call and I'll just lie on the floor and close my eyes and put an eye mask on. And that might be the only real rest that I get. But doing that and actually taking that time instead of like checking my email, you know, some of it requires a bit of discipline. I need to rest. And also perspective to see, you know, where can I actually remove something from my life? Where am I doing something that I actually don't want to do? Where am I telling myself that I need to do or be something that is actually not in alignment with me, which is going to then be a net energy drain as well. And so, you know, one of the things that I love about the herbs that we use adaptogenic herbs in our blend, and adaptogens are herbs that there's a whole lot of science around this, but, fundamentally they're helping your nervous system and your endocrine system handle stress better. It's actually like exercise for your stress. So they're able to, you know, lift 10 pounds than 15 pounds, of stress more easily. When you have a little bit of that buffer between you and stress, you also have the ability to use perspective. You actually have more access to your cognitive executive function in your mind, which gives you more of that purview, more of that metacognitive awareness to be like, wait a second, I don't even like this person. Why am I, you know, trying to, you know, hang out with, you know, make myself more exhausted and more stressed by maintaining social relationships that aren't actually serving me, for example, you know, or, you know, I keep telling myself I have zero time to exercise, but I really could, you know, take this phone call and take a walk around the block while I'm on the phone call for, you know, or whatever. And so having that just little bit of buffer to be able to see, ways that we can, again, source our energy, downshift our energy, and just generally have a healthier relationship to our bodies and the energy that we are gifted with, is a really beautiful thing. And sometimes that may include, you know, I probably drink coffee myself about, once a week. We have one blend that has coffee in it. And then maybe once a month I'll actually get like a latte at a cafe or something. And it's wonderful. I feel amazing. And I'm like, yes, this is awesome. I see why people love coffee. you know, it's kind of like, I'm getting drunk, you know, and like, that's the, you know, and I'm not going to do that all the time as my normal MO, but it's not a bad thing. You know, it's about finding the right pattern and the right, balance for your own life and your own body and really having that awareness of what works for you.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what I believe it's most important. And, in my experience as well, like I'm not forcing myself, for instance, to feel grateful when I know that I'm really tired and I'm defaulting to a state of just staying alive somehow. I know that I need to rest, and once I rest, I don't need to solve all of the problems in my head, all of the negative thoughts that I have, but I just need to rest, to detach. And after I do so, it somehow the problems disappear, and I have a new perspective, and I have the resources to deal with that differently. And I think that's very important to do. And I'm really happy that you mentioned this, because we talk a lot about our brain, how it works, and how we can actually get from a state of to a state of responsiveness instead of a state of reacting to the situation. So yeah, I think it's amazing that we have these kinds of alternatives, that you're bringing this to the world. And I know that you've generated a special code for our listeners as well, right?
Yes, we have. Gratitude will get you 20% off at our store, at wearerasa.com.
Awesome. Thank you very much for being here with us, for sharing so many amazing ideas. And I think it was a really beautiful time spent, beautifully spent time. And yeah, I'm really happy that we had the opportunity to speak and to talk about energy and gratitude. Thank you, Lopa. Yeah,
likewise. Thank you so much, George, and it's been a pleasure.